Welcome to Guest in the Homes, where we interview scholars and those with connections to the homes to gain insight into the Klein family and the historical context of the homes. I'm Karen Thaliker.
I'm Andrew Newell. Thank you for joining us for Guest in the Homes.
We'd like to introduce our guest for today, Ruth Nelson. Ruth is the granddaughter of Reverend and Mrs. Klein and the daughter of Erna and Arnold. She is my dad's older sister. Welcome, Aunt Ruth.
Welcome to the podcast, Aunt Ruth.
Karen and Andy, I just want to say that I'm so pleased that you've been pursuing this interesting history. Those of us who knew and remembered Grandma and Grandpa Klein from the homes knew that they really did try to take everything very seriously. They selflessly served the people, and they were completely dedicated, and we thank you for pursuing this history. You know, we as the grandchildren can always be grateful that you're willing to talk about it a little, and that we have these great things like a podcast to be able to express our opinions about their life there. So thank you again.
We are so glad to have you here and just so grateful that you would be willing to talk to us about it. So as you think about the homes, the orphanage, and the old folks' home, what sticks out most in your memory?
Well, it was large. I do remember that. It was, the main building was a very large building, and it was stone, and there were many steps going up to it. And we always entered into Grandpa's office. And from his office to the left was what they called their living room. And it was, you know, some comfortable chairs and a sofa and things like that. But that was not their apartment. Then you went out another door and upstairs to get to their apartment. And so we always went up there. The apartment was three rooms with a bathroom. And it led right out, the bathroom led right out into a hallway that was usually, there were usually people out there. Old people shuffling along, or the workers were there. Martha Witzke, Tracy and Agnes for Kempshire were some of the people I remember.
What do you remember about Martha Witzke? She was Grandma Klein's friend from childhood, is that right?
Well, apparently, I did not know that until I found this picture a few years ago of the two of them together and realized, and I asked Barb's brother, Kurt, whether that was Martha, and he said, oh, yes. So he, of course, had known Martha, too. Martha was always there when we were there. She always came to see us when we came. And she was, you know, kind of fun. She was a little bit of a tease, and she was just fun to be around. We all liked her.
Your mom, Erna, was born in North Dakota. Did your mom ever talk to you about what their life was like in North Dakota?
Oh, yes, of course. And not just Grandma, not just Erna, but all five children were born in North Dakota. And she loved North Dakota. I one time heard that between the ages of 8 and 12, where you live is where you think life ought to be. That it's often, a biologist told me that. And I think that's why she loved North Dakota. She thought the people were great, her playmates were great, the animals were great. She just had fun in North Dakota. So we often heard stories about North Dakota, and Bill and I thought it was some exotic place out in, I don't know where we thought it was, but we really did find it fun to have her tell us about it.
Well, it sounds like Grandpa Klein wore quite a few hats up in North Dakota.
Well, he did, I think. He went there as the Russians, the Germans from Russia, were coming there and settling. He was what I call him a pioneer pastor. Germans from Russia were interesting in that they came about the time of, maybe around the 1870, 1880. Ethically, linguistically, culturally, they had stayed German when they were in Russia. And then they came here to the United States as the land was opening up to be homesteaded, and Grandpa homesteaded a quarter of a section of land across the street from the church. But these people would often settle in groups almost by religion. There were the Lutherans in one group, and they were almost all either Lutherans or Roman Catholic. And then the Catholics would be in another area. And they settled all over the Great Plains. They had come from the steppes of Russia, and so they were used to farming that kind of land, and not everyone wanted to farm that particular kind of land. It's wheat-growing country. It was hard for them to become culturally assimilated. I think Grandpa played a great part in trying to do that. I did not know this, but my daughter Jennifer told me that he came over to the United States speaking speaking English. He, of course, was German, had a German accent his whole life, but he spoke English. And when he was asked to teach school, he was probably the only person around who had some sort of an education. And was asked to teach school, he taught it in English. I think he taught his confirmation classes in German, and I think he preached German.
Did he teach actually in a home that they, in their own home, they didn't teach out of a schoolhouse? Is that right?
I think there was a schoolhouse. I think it was a little white schoolhouse that had been built. And I'm not sure that he did that many years, but he did it some, when they couldn't get a teacher out there.
Did the school children and the children from the church, did they actually ever have to stay with the Kleins in their house?
Oh, yes. Actually, I don't think they did it. They didn't have school in the winter very. There were certain months of the year that they did not have school, Mother said, and because it was too hard to get the kids to school. And, of course, it was a little longer. In Iowa, they had a school every 2 miles, but not in North Dakota. That was a little larger territory. I think as long as they could ride a horse and get to school, they would do that. But then in the winter, they didn't have school, but then Grandpa and Grandma kept them at their house, and they had confirmation. And I think everybody that went to school belonged to the church. It was a Lutheran area.
Did your mom tell you a story about what happened to a little girl who was staying at the
house?
Well,
she said that, she told me that she woke up one morning and the little girl was dead in bed beside her. And apparently she had been sick. She had scarlet fever, maybe. I think that's mother, I'm not sure, knew exactly what she died from. This was not uncommon, I think. It was pretty tough to get doctors out to that part of North Dakota at that time.
It's hard to imagine going from a life like that in North Dakota for your mom and then moving to a place like Muscatine. There was a city there. And not only that, you're with 100 other people on a day-to-day basis. That must have been quite a shock.
Well, I think she was about ready to go into high school. And I don't think they had high school in North Dakota. I think that Sammy, Barb's mom, had to come to Wartburg to the academy to even go to high school. And that's why they sent her out here to Iowa. And then I think Mother went to Wartburg Academy also for at least 1 or 2 years and then finished up at Muscatine High School. I don't know. I wonder sometimes. Mother used to tell a story of them being invited to people's home after church, and they would fill this. It would be in the winter and lots of snow, and there were no fences out there.
And this was in North Dakota?
This was in North Dakota, and they would fill the sled with hot bricks, and everyone would curl down into the sled next to these hot bricks, and Grandpa would run alongside beside the horses as they went across the prairie to someone's home for dinner. And I thought later, when he lived to be 93, you know, he had a pretty good cardiac workout.
Aunt Ruth, what do you remember about Grandpa Klein? Anything about the way he acted or looked or spoke with you?
Well, sure. You know, he was a small man, and it seemed that he got tinier as he grew older. And I remember that by the time Grandma died in 1957, I walked with him. He asked if I wouldn't walk with him down the aisle at the church for her funeral. And I felt like I probably had high heels on, but I felt like I just towered over him. And I was 5'6", so I'm not that tall. But he was very small. He spoke English to us. He did not speak German. He was very understandable. His English was very, very good. There were German phrases that the whole family used, like Ach du lieber, or the women were always putzing around. And I did not know what that really meant. I assumed it was a German phrase, but I didn't think too much about it until I moved to Germany, and a lady appeared at my door the day after we moved there, and she said, "Hello, guten Tag. I am your Putzfrau." And that meant she was going to come and work for me. And I thought, oh, that's where Putz is something it's a German word that they use in Germany.
I would like to have
a Putzfrau there.
I would like to have a Putzfrau show up at my door. Is that possible?
You are right. It's the only time I ever have had that kind of help. She came 3 days a week. Until after Carolyn was born, she was there 5 days a week. She was great. And she was like a grandma to our kids. She was great. You know, that's where the Putzen came from, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. There were other, you know, later I'll talk to you about all of Grandpa's nieces and nephews that we met when we lived in Germany. We only lived 20 miles from where he was born. And so we knew his nieces and nephews, three nieces and one nephew. And the family resemblance was just amazing to me. They all looked like Grandpa Klein.
How old was he when he came over?
Well, I think he had already finished at the university, one of the universities, and I wish I knew which one, but I do not. He'd already finished at the university in Germany, and he had been in Kaiser Wilhelm's army for 2 years. He had served his time in the army. I think he had to do that.
Yeah, they had mandatory military service.
And that would have been the first Kaiser Wilhelm.
Well, the Kaiser Wilhelm of about 1890s.
But he came by himself. It wasn't, you know, you hear about a lot of families coming over, parents and children, but he actually left his parents.
Well, he came to go to the seminary here because he already had a degree from a German university. So he came over to go to Wartburg Seminary at Dubuque.
But his family stayed behind.
His family stayed behind. These were his sister's children.
Yeah, that you got to meet when you lived in Germany.
When we lived in Germany. I think I may be the only grandchild that has lived in Germany, not far from where he grew up, and in North Dakota.
That's pretty special.
That's kind of nice. I've connected with him all along. I did not know this, but Grandpa really didn't ever drive. He tried to one time, Mother said. But he brought his new car home, and I'm sure it was a Model A or Model T probably, and ran it right through the end of the shed. He didn't know how to stop it. So he took it back to the where he bought it and never drove again. So I think he was probably kind of glad to get to Muscatine where he didn't have to drive.
What do you remember about Grandma Klein?
Grandma Klein was, neither one of the grandparents were of the sit in your lap and let me read you a story kind of people. When she was in Muscatine, the minute we got there, Mother was off with her, and because she had work to do, and Grandma was always busy, and nice, you know, she greeted us well and that kind of thing, but then we would be left behind with Dad and maybe go with him somewhere. But Mother was off with Grandma, and Grandma had work for her to do. She was an RN, and Grandma would have, and Grandma was sort of in charge of all the older people at the home. You know, there would be concerns. The people would have concerns. And so it had to do, I think, with sores on their feet and toenails that needed to be cut and other things that needed to be done. Maybe she needed to look at something else. I don't know. The people at the home were always, they could walk. They were not in wheelchairs. I think some of them used canes, but if they had any serious illness, they went to the hospital, and that was that time of that was what happened at that time.
It must
Grandma
have
did not care for people that were seriously ill.
It must have been exhausting for her. It sounds like that was a 24-hour-a-day commitment for her.
I think it was. And their little apartment was really bare bones, Karen. There was not, you know, nothing was really very comfortable there. They had two bedrooms and this little sitting room. And I don't even remember a couch. I remember kind of one of these couches where you, I don't know what you would call it, kind of you just lie down and had a little, but no back on it. And a few chairs and a desk. They had a little desk, and she had a little china cabinet. And that's just about all. And linoleum floors, maybe a rag rug or two, but that's about it.
Again, you know, coming from North Dakota, where you were living in your own home, to, you know, an orphanage, an old folks home, where you live in an apartment above the old folks home, that's quite a change.
Well, in fact, they were living right there with the old people. They were right there in rooms next door and down the hall and so on. Their apartment was just one of the doors. You know, I remember being a little frightened at times, and I would peek out the door from the bathroom, which led right into the hallway, and peek out the door, and there was one little old gentleman who I'm sure was quite deaf, and that's why he yelled, but if he was out in the hall and he saw me, he yelled at me, and I would quickly run back in to the apartment. I was a little afraid of him, I think, and I'm quite sure I was. But if he wasn't there, then I could run and go somewhere that I wanted to go. But really, for the most part, we as little children did not have much to do with either the old people or the orphans. My grandma, I remember her telling me this. I said, why did you live in North Dakota for 21 years or 22 years? I think they left in 21. They went there in 1899. And she said, you know, the people were just so nice. We just loved our country place. We just loved being there. The winters were hard, and but I think life as a country pastor was not too difficult for them there. They enjoyed it. I know Grandpa did not farm that quarter acre quarter section that he homesteaded. I mean, he rented that out, and I think that rent went all, I mean, he didn't sell that till quite a bit later after they left North Dakota. It probably helped put his kids through college.
And they have a child that's buried in the cemetery in North Dakota.
They have a child that's buried in the cemetery. And my brothers, at least John and probably Bill too, but John and Jim have, and I have given money to that cemetery to maintain that particular little grave. You know, I've given to the church too. You know, we've had a little contact with people out there. May I tell you about Alma Cook?
Yes, do.
Okay, Alma Cook, we met when we went out there, and I was there with Bill and with Fred and Chris and Marilyn. And Roland and I, we all drove out there, and we went to the church in Center, which Grandpa had started. He was, these pioneer pastors started churches in places, and Center was a near town. So we went there to look at some records, and we talked to the pastor. He said, you know, you really ought to talk to Alma Cook. And so we went to Alma Cook's house. He called her and said we were coming, and we just had the nicest visit. And Alma told me that Grandma, and this is the history of Grandma Klein, that from the time that the church was brand new, when they got married and moved there, I think it was maybe 1 year old, the church building itself, Grandma Klein played the organ there for the next 21 years. But she also gave music lessons to the little girls around. So when they left, a gal played that she had given lessons to for the next 18, 19 years. And then Alma Cook took over, and she played for 50 years. And so when the church closed at its 100th anniversary, and we were living in North Dakota at the time, and this was on the front page of the Fargo Forum that this church was closing out there, Alma Cook said, they said they were giving her some kind of a honor for playing the organ that long. So she said, your grandma either played or taught every single person that ever played for that church in 100 years.
Wow.
That's called service. But she said it really, she taught all kinds of kids how to play the piano, I guess.
Do you ever remember going to the Orphans Day celebration in the summer? Do you remember what that was like?
That was a big deal. That was really a big deal. It was huge. You know, all these congregations of the Iowa Synod, it was called at that time, the German Church, the German Lutheran Church of the Eastern Iowa, were all supporters of the Muscatine Homes, and also Western Illinois, from Davenport up north to Clinton, all that area around, all those churches supported the Lutheran Homes. And so these people came on this Sunday, and in the morning the service was in German, and then in the afternoon it was in English, and we all sat out under the trees on benches up by the cemetery and by the school. This was kind of a large operation, and there was a program. There were hymns, and someone preached, and the choir, they had a choir with the children, and they sang. And there may have been some other things going on, but that's what I remember. And there were a lot of people there. And I remember that we usually went down for the whole weekend, and Mother and I would go down to the kitchen and help prepare. I don't think I don't think they fed everyone that came. There might have even been kind of a picnic. I'm not sure. Because if they came for the morning service and stayed, there had to be something. You know, there was some food to be prepared. And maybe it was brownies or cookies or something. I don't know. But Mother and I would go down and work with Gertrude Heppy in the kitchen to help. And along with the girls, the older girls that were there, the orphans, would help in the kitchen. Also, they were teaching them some culinary skills, and the boys helped on the farm.
Did you tell me at one point that you saw Miss Heppy later on when you were older?
I did. She worked in Des Moines at one of the hospitals there, and it was just happened to be down the street from our home, and so I stopped in to see her. She was also German. She had an accent, so she had obviously come from Germany. And for the most part, the meals were very good. I remember there was a dumbwaiter that came up from the kitchen to the dining room in the homes. There would be big bowls of sauerkraut. It was sort of served family style. And this would be at the dining room for the older people, and that's where Grandma and Grandpa ate and where they had their guests come to eat also. I don't remember ever eating with the children wherever they ate. I do not know, but they did not eat at this in this dining room. Everyone came, and I remember carrying, even as a little girl, carrying some bowls of mashed potatoes and things to each table. Each table would have those kinds of things, a platter of meat and a platter of potatoes and a platter of vegetables and that kind of thing. She was a very good cook.
It's hard to even comprehend the scale, I think, of the operation there with the farm and the school and 100 children and 50 old folks and all the people that worked there. I would assume it was just all hands on deck all the time.
It was. I don't remember more than about three people working with the old people. I don't know how they did that. It was Martha Witzke and Tracy and Agnes for Kempshire, and they were sisters. And I remember them out in the hallways, dust, you know, with the dust mop, because all the hallways were creaky and hardwood. And I'm sure that they maybe tried to get to everyone's room once a week and change a bed or something like that. But the old people themselves were able to do some things, you know, and the women would sit, and they made many rag rugs from old clothing, things like that. They were always making rugs.
I just can't even imagine the laundry operation there.
Well, and that I don't know much about. I think there was quite a lot of laundry, and I don't know. I don't remember anything hanging on a line. They didn't have dryers in those days. So there must have been out in the back, and I just didn't ever see it. We weren't there on the weekends at all. We were always there in the middle of the week. And where we lived in Monticello was only about 60 miles from Muscatine. I think sometimes our trips were just day trips. And if Grandma needed Mother's help for some reason, you know, she would call. We would maybe just go down for the day. We didn't go on the weekends, but Dad was a pastor and he had his own work.
The newsletters occasionally do mention your mom coming to the homes when, you know, there are times when 10 children have their tonsils out at the same time. And so your mom as an RN would go there and help care for the kids.
I think so. She worked in the operating room. She loved operating room. And so she did that for Dr. Wolf in Marshalltown. And I think that was even before she got married, because she graduated from nurses training in 1929 and didn't get married until 1932. So there was a period of time that she was working and living in Marshalltown with Sammy and Carl, her sister and brother-in-law. This was Depression times. They all did what they could.
Aunt Ruth, how do you think the Klein's experience at the homes has influenced your family?
Well, my dad said that he first went to the homes. He was a classmate of one of Grandpa and Grandma's sons, Herb, at Wartburg at Clinton, when Wartburg College, the pre-SEM college, was an academy. And Dad even went in eighth grade, so he was there for 9 years. He said that Herb would occasionally come down from Clinton. That isn't very far to Muscatine. It's all on the river. And they would probably take the train down, and then they would stay up in the attic, which was a whole upper area of beds where they just had one bed after another. And I suppose they just gave him sheets and said, go up and make yourself at home. But Dad said he remembered doing that even long before he met Mother, that he was there with Herb. So Dad was always interested in the homes. And I remember that one time, I think I read in one of his bulletins after he became a pastor, that he was promoting the work of the homes. And he said, now the congregation in Tama has produced 40 jars of canned goods for the Muscatine Lutheran homes. Surely we in this congregation can do the same thing. That was even before he got married, you know, but he was already a pastor.
And your parents were married at the chapel at the homes, is that right?
They were. And so Sammy and Carl were married there. They were married there. And I just read it recently. The bulletin, Dad announced it on Sunday and said, you know, I'm going to be married on Tuesday. Good day to get married on Tuesday. But I think that, you know, these fellows that were pastors couldn't do anything on a weekend. And then he just said, my wife and I will be gone for the remainder of the week to Wisconsin. And so, you know, but it was just, he announced it in the bulletin. And that was all there was. I don't think, wasn't, I'm sure, a big wedding. I did notice, though, either a newspaper article or something that came out about my folks' wedding, and it said that there was a Glenn Woodridge there. Now, Glenn Woodridge was a pastor who went on, you know, he was from Wartburg Seminary, but he had been an orphan and grew up at the homes and then became a pastor, and he was at my parents' wedding.
And so, Aunt Ruth, we are actually going to talk about Glenn Woodridge.
Oh, are you?
In the podcast, we sure are.
Well, he was at my parents' wedding.
Oh, how
I remember him. I know what he looked like. But I don't remember that we had a lot to do with him in my life.
So as an adult, you went back and visited the homes after they were no longer accepting children. It was exclusively senior living campus. I think once you went with your husband, Roald, and then again, you went with my dad and me. What were your thoughts as you saw the places that you had visited as a child?
You know, it was, of course, far different. It was a nice long-term care facility. I think it's a very nice facility. I did not realize that they had taken, I think photography was, for the general public, was really just coming out at the time that the grandparents lived there. And so there were lots of pictures taken. And one of my friends, a congregation member from our Palmer congregation, actually, had her husband was in the long-term care facility. And they were friends of our family. And one day she said to me, you know, you ought to go to the Lutheran homes because there are pictures all up and down the hallways. And she said, I used to push my husband up and down the hallway and look at those pictures. And she said, there are many pictures of your grandparents. So that's what kind of spurred me on when we came back one time to see Susan about 25 years ago, I'm sure. We went to Muscatine so I could see these pictures. And then they said, well, there are more downstairs. I just went and introduced myself and said, I'm granddaughter. And we went downstairs and there were more all along the hallway. And there are still some down there now. But I'm very glad they're making that little history room because it is a great history.
And I'll have to remind our podcast listeners that we have an Instagram page called Life at the Homes. And guess what, Aunt Ruth? We're going to put up some very adorable pictures of you on the Life at the Homes Instagram, particularly a family picture that was taken there. And we'll make sure that our listeners know just exactly who you are. So we want people to check out Life at the Homes on Instagram.
Right.
Your grandparents really did lead lives of service.
They did. They were very dedicated. I don't ever remember that there wasn't anything. I mean, it was all taken rather seriously. everything they did. And of course, Grandpa, when he was in Muscatine, would often call on, you know, if he needed some help. My dad had this big family of brothers, and so, you know, he'd call. People from the congregations would maybe go and work. Aunt Leon went and worked there for a while, and I don't know if that's where she met Uncle Bill or whether it was at our home, because her parents were members of our congregation, so they could have met in Monticello. She went and worked there for a while. Uncle Paul was a supervisor of the boys there. And then Grandpa's great assistant was a gal named Eleanor Lau. And Eleanor, my mother used to say, Eleanor is the most organized person I have ever known. And my mother was pretty organized. But she said she just runs that office for Grandpa. And she was just dedicated. Well, then Eleanor met my Uncle Paul, who was the boy supervisor, my dad's brother, and they married and had four nice boys of their own. And anyhow, there were all these kinds of marriages that were going on, and it was fun.
Lots of connections to your family, our family.
Lots of connections. My dad and mother supported this in the churches that we were at, even when we got out to Palmer, and that was in western Iowa. You know, there was support for the Muscatine Lutheran Homes. And Barb's uncle, her dad's brother, Leo, drove the truck that came around to all these churches and picked up these canned goods. I call them canned goods. They were in jars, you know. But he'd have a whole truck full from all these congregations. It was sort of like Lutheran World Relief is today, where people send quilts and things like that. These were canned goods, and apparently there was no problem with using those kinds of things either.
Yeah, I think later on the health department
shut that
down, and I think that again was one of the problems in trying to keep a place like that open.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that's true. And of course, our family, one of my dad and mother's good friends, another pastor and his wife, later went to Muscatine. This was Lawrence Stummy. Lawrence, I'm still a very good friend of their daughter-in-law and talked to her occasionally and sent her your paper, Andy, and she was interested because they were at Muscatine when she and her husband, who was a classmate of Rhodes, were married. And she just said that it later got to be the kids would run away and Lawrence would get calls in the middle of the night about someone disappearing. And that kind of thing. And the state of Iowa was needing to do much more social service work with children, especially, than they had done before.
Well, Aunt Ruth, I think this has been a really wonderful conversation. We really enjoy hearing your stories and your memories. And thank you again for joining us on this podcast.
Oh, you are very welcome.
Thanks, Aunt Ruth. Love you.
I'm glad to do it. Yes, thank you.